What's going on, everybody? It's your boy Jordan.
And this is Desmond.
And welcome to episode 229 of Two Black Nerds. That's right. It's that time once again for us to bring you our opinions and our takes on all things fandom, pop culture, and entertainment. As always, you can find Two Black Nerds wherever you get your podcasts. Please make sure to hit that subscribe button and leave us a friendly rating and comment to show your support. And of course, join in on the conversation each and every week by following us on all social media at Two Black Nerds. We appreciate that love, y'all. And let's not forget to mention we have merchandise that's available now at twoblacknerds.com. Go check out our Nerds of Mischief collection, inspired by Loki. We got t-shirts, crew necks, hoodies, stickers, mugs, and tote bags. So go ahead and place those orders right now. On today's show, we'll be reviewing the latest episode of the Marvel Studios animated series X-Men 97. As usual, we'll recap and discuss the new installment in a spoiler-filled discussion of the major moments that occurred. But before we get to any and all of that, we're kicking off this week's podcast with our quick non-spoiler thoughts of episode 3, which is entitled Fire Made Flesh. So last week we kicked off our reviews of this brand new animated series X-Men 97, and I think it's safe to say that we both really enjoyed that two episode premiere almost in a surprising fashion. I think it caught a lot of people off guard just at how good it was and how much celebration there was around the return of this animated series, obviously in this new form, but it was really firing on all cylinders. And I think a lot of fans are starting to see that this is getting them excited about Marvel, the future of animation, and then also the future of mutants in the MCU as well. And so now we are rocking and rolling here with this brand new X-Men show, and we are definitely here to talk about the latest episode with episode 3. We'll have seven more after this. This is going to be a 10-episode first season. But yeah, after that first two-episode premiere coming into episode 3, how did you feel about what you saw this past week? What were your overall thoughts about the latest episode of X-Men 97?
Oh man, this episode is weird. It is weird, but I like it. I like it because it's weird. And they weren't afraid to kind of get into the nitty gritty of some X-Men deep stuff that they have before. I think one really cool thing that X-Men animated series in the 90s did have was all those cool storylines that we talked about, from Dark Phoenix stuff to anything with the Days of Future Past, the Cable stuff, the Apocalypse. All of that stuff is so different and weird and comic booky, and they weren't afraid, I think, to show their head again kind of in this episode. Not that the other two episodes before this weren't weird, but this is like some deep lore X-Men stuff, you know what I mean? Like this one definitely is like, okay, what's happening again? It got a little spiritual on us. And I really like that. People who watch Jujutsu Kaisen has really feel like an episode of Jujutsu Kaisen to me with a like an X-Men finish on it, and I really like that about it as well. This episode does adapt a pretty well-known storyline, and they changed some things, and I thought they did a good job. It does happen really fast, I will say that. I was like, dang, the episode's over already. Dang, we went through the storyline already. It does kind of start and kind of, you know, end in a spot for us to move on. But I also like that. I also like the episodic. Sometimes you don't have to spend 4 or 5 episodes on a story arc. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes it's like, get in, get out, do the plot points you need. And that's what this episode was. So, yeah, man, I enjoyed the episode. I thought it was very well crafted, as the past ones were. There were still more laughs. There was still cool animation. There was still cool choreography happening in the fights that we did get. And we seen a very well-known villain that I was very happy to see him back, because I honestly think we'll see him soon in live action as well. So, yeah, just happy to be here, man, and happy to have another good X-Men 97 episode.
Yeah, I certainly have to echo those sentiments that this is a very weird episode. They waste no time getting into the deep mythology and the deep lore and some of the weird strangeness that can exist within X-Men comics. I mean, this episode has magic and psychic powers and clones and all sorts of crazy stuff within it. Mm-hmm. But I think it works really well, and I appreciate the fact that as fans of the source material, you'll come in and obviously recognize that this is adapting the Inferno story from 1989, and it definitely is a truncated effort at doing so. But even if you aren't a fan of the comics or the source material, or you're not familiar with it, I think that the fact that this is obviously aiming to do something that is a little bit more mature, even to this day, compared to that original 90s animated series, it's really admirable to see, because they are just completely diving into what makes X-Men so unique and different from all of the other stuff that we typically see, you know. And I think that this is just like another reinforcement of the idea that the X-Men are not the Avengers. And I think even when we get to live action, those distinctions will be drawn and made once again, that this is a very different type of team. They're obviously more of a close-knit family, so that distinguishes them from the Avengers. But even the villains that they deal with, the mythology, just the numerous amounts of characters and the long, long lineage and history of many of these characters, where they come from and other mutants, obviously, because there's just like generational stuff that taps into X-Men, and they are absolutely getting into all of that with this episode in particular. And I really enjoyed it. I thought that even the animation style as well this week was elevated. It went to other places that I didn't anticipate it to, and it kind of showed me the beauty behind what they can achieve with this new animation that they've integrated into the more classical style that we're used to with that animated series from the 90s. But I really enjoyed it overall. I think it was definitely a strong addition to what we already saw with the two episode premiere, and it gets me really excited just about, again, what they can do with other villains that they reintroduce or introduce in the future, arcs and stories that they continue to adapt from the comics, because we might be in a little bit of a different age where, you know, we won't necessarily get 4, 5, 6 episode arcs anymore just because seasons are a lot shorter. But if they can still manage to truncate stories and do them within an episode or two as effectively as I think that they did here, then I'm okay with that. I don't think that we necessarily need to go on a 7-week journey to adapt a popular comic storyline. Sometimes less can be more, especially if you're really trying to introduce audiences, I think, in a way that feels a little bit lighter, a little bit more of a light-handed approach maybe to what we've experienced in the past. So overall, really successful episode to me. I really enjoyed it thoroughly. But with all of that said, let's go ahead and just dive into, again, to spoilers and talk about the nitty-gritty details of the latest episode. So if you've not seen Fire Made Flesh, episode 3 of X-Men 97, this is your spoiler warning. We're going to get into it all right now. So go watch the episode, come back, and listen to the rest of this episode later. But as I mentioned, you know, this does adapt the 1989 Inferno story, which, you know, was a really massive crossover story that not only incorporated a number of X-Men titles at the time, like Uncanny X-Men and even the New Mutants, but it also incorporated some Spider-Man titles at the time as well into that larger story. So it was pulling in so many different characters. And so to come into this week knowing that this was a sprawling epic on the comic book page that was going to be really kind of adapted into just a 30-minute episode, I think, you know, was something that kind of gave me pause, like, oh, I don't know how they're going to really effectively manage this. I don't know if they're going to be able to pull this off. But again, I think, you know, sort of reinforcing that idea of what we just talked about, it felt like that they kept the most important elements. You know, they obviously trimmed a lot of the fat. Many of the other, you know, sort of extra elements, extra characters, you know, couldn't be included here just due to time. How did you feel about watching the episode, just the pacing of it? Because I do think that it moves very, very quickly. However, again, keeping those really, really important elements, it felt like that they really, I think, mostly hit a home run in terms of executing the ideas that they set out to achieve.
Yeah, it was, again, it was like, whoa, we really sped through this thing. And again, at first it was jarring, but I think the ride is what mattered. I was like, I was still having a good time. I did sit there and go like, dang, did we skip like 50 things just now? But again, by the end of the episode, I was like, you know, we only have so many episodes in this season, and I'm very happy, to kind of move this way, man. But I also think, When making a show like this, like, you have to, I think you have to remember the audience that it's for too. And a lot of us are kind of impatient nowadays. And we are, a lot of us are also on the flip side of that, are used to watching like these 45-minute episode things, you know what I mean? And it doesn't always work for, animation. It sure certainly isn't the DNA of what 90s X-Men was, right? And so I think and we don't know when we're going to get like another season, you know what I mean? Like, so it's almost like you got to do what you can right now, and make sure it's comprehensible and fun. And I think that's what they're trying to do. They don't want anything to feel slow. Nothing has felt slow to me so far. Everything has been go, go, go. And again, with only 7 episodes left, I can only imagine what we're about to get now. I'm over here like, dang, if we can do that in one episode, what are we? Because Goblin Queen, that storyline, that Inferno storyline, it can be a lot, and a decent amount happens. And to do that in the 30 minutes that we got is very impressive. And so, yeah, I definitely paid attention to it. I knew we were moving fast, but I think I'm still happy with the outcome overall.
Certainly, it definitely moves at a good clip, but I think it is a necessary movement, just because, you know, one of the things we talked about last week was the fact that it felt like that this particular season was going to focus on some of those characters that didn't get the opportunity to shine in the previous animated series as much as I think that they probably deserved, and or they were probably done a disservice in other adaptations like the live action movies where we see them elsewhere. And it's like, well, I'm not really a Jean Grey fan or a Cyclops fan because they don't really give me much of a reason to in those movies. But again, I think focusing in on the most important elements is the goal here. And the most important elements here are, you know, obviously the effects and the outcome of what's happening to Jean, the fact that a clone shows up and it's like, what the hell is going on? And we find out that the clone is actually the original. That's the real Jean Grey, the one that's been there that has this child with Scott. That's the clone in all actuality. And that obviously affects the entire dynamic of the X-Men and of course Scott as a direct repercussion of that fact, you know, now that he has to sort of reprocess everything that he thought that he knew. So I think that just focusing on those most important things was the wise choice. Of course, you're going to deal with some very quick pacing, but this is an animated series, you know, and they only have those 30 minutes. And so I kind of expect it to be a fast paced show. I'm not really coming in necessarily looking for 7-minute scenes of dialogue in an animated show. Like, save that for the hour-long HBO dramas. That's where that can exist. This is supposed to, I think, be a much more fast-paced show. But speaking of that, we do find out that this clone that appeared at the end of last episode is, in fact, the original Jean Grey. Beast does some DNA tests and finds out that at some point they've been swapped out. And so the one that's been at X-Mansion, the one that has this new child with Scott, Nathan Summers, she is, in fact, a clone herself. And ultimately, they find out that the person responsible for all of this is Mr. Sinister, which is a big, big bad villain in the X-Men universe. And I think a lot of people saw this coming if you knew the story of the comic. But of course, just his relationship and what his motivation is to the X-Men, the fact that he's obsessed with cloning DNA and genes and you know, the fact that Jean Grey and Cyclops are largely considered to have some of the most perfect mutant DNA. And he is obsessed with getting their DNA to copy and clone it and to manipulate it in whatever way he wanted to. But how did you feel about the return of Mr. Sinister here? I mean, he was a huge presence in the original animated series, big, big villain of the X-Men all throughout comics history, and now certainly coming back and really influencing, I think, the future trajectory of both Jean Greys that are going to exist within the story.
Yeah, I liked it because he is such an important villain, especially now that Magneto's kind of on the X-Men side, at least as far as we know right now. It's like, okay, who's going to be our potential reoccurring big bad, you know, now that Magneto is kind of in a different seat? And I think Mr. Sinister is perfect. He's been here all along. He still has clearly all the interest in the world, like you said, for these mutant genes as he continues to also alter himself. I think it makes sense that it's Mr. Sinister, and I'm happy to see him, especially, again, we know we have to get X-Men in live action very soon. And a lot of people, to be honest, because of live action, don't really know who Mr. Sinister is. They don't. And it's just kind of, you know, it kind of fell through the cracks a little bit with those live action movies. And so him being brought back here, I think hopefully now he's being put on more people's radars. That way, if something does happen down the line and they are like, oh, Mr. Sinister is going to use him in one of these X-Men movies, we know who he is. And I'm like, okay, cool. I'm glad that's like something that they can put in there for newer audiences, but also give, you know, kind of that love for older audiences or people who are familiar with X-Men the animated series and be like, yeah, Mr. Sinister is still here. So I thought it was a smart inclusion. You can't have the Goblin Queen to me without Mr. Sinister anyway. So yeah, I think it all makes sense.
Yeah, very strategic placement here on the part of Marvel Studios. There is a big rumor going around that whenever we do see the mutants or the X-Men in the live action MCU, that the plan is to have Mr. Sinister be the villain in whatever the movie is going to be. That is a rumor that is circulating. Obviously, it's yet to be confirmed. We don't even know what an X-Men or a mutant movie is going to look like in live action. But if that is the case, do you think that that's something that could be successful? I mean, it feels like a villain, as iconic as he is to the characters and has been in the comics and other mediums, kind of a tough code to crack, I think, in live action. You know, it's not necessarily the easiest thing, I think, to adapt. There's a lot. It's a lot of history behind Mr. Sinister. This is, you know, a villain that is like hundreds and hundreds of years old, and there is like scientific things related to it. There's psychic and magic. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff there. How do you feel about what challenge might lie ahead in terms of like actually bringing that to life if they were to choose to adapt them on the big screen?
I think part of it is timing. It's funny because I remember, I think post-credit scene of X-Men Apocalypse, they tried to like throw in Mr. Sinister in there. but
wow, I forgot about that. They did. Yeah,
there was like a briefcase or something. It was like Sinister. Like, I forgot what it said, but I do kind of remember that being a thing. You know, he's a tough nut to crack. He is. Just as they struggle with Dark Phoenix, just as they struggle with Apocalypse. Like, really, to be honest, X-Men villains are just hard to adapt. Probably Magneto would be the easiest because he is the most normal, you know what I mean? He's like the most normal villain. And so I think time is hard because we don't necessarily want to go through like a ton of origin anything anymore. You know what I mean? A lot of us are tired of origin things. And so it's like, how do you get Mr. Sinister to be a villain without explaining too much? You know what I mean? It's not like it's one of those things where, as weird as Thanos was, we still had like lore about him in the background. Now you come into a new X-Men movie, we haven't heard anything about Mr. Sinister. We don't know where he is in the world. We don't know what's going on. And I think that's the biggest challenge, is getting people caught up to be like, oh, that's who this villain is. Oh, that's what this villain is about. In the timing to say, oh, this is also a good X-Men movie. We have all these characters to still worry about. It's a hard thing, I think, that they're going to have to figure out. But I think it's possible. And I think that's part of the reason for why they throw him in here. It's like, maybe we don't have to explain too much if, like, eventually we're like, you know, X-Men 97 is canon. If they say that, it's like, oh, there it is. Go watch X-Men. Go watch X-Men, the animated series, you know? And so maybe that's their plan. Maybe that's what they're doing. But again, I think it really is an undertaking. It can be hard for somebody like Mr. Sinister, like you said. He's weird. It's a weird dude. But also, I think thankfully, for better or for worse, the MCU got weirder. We are pretty weird right now in the MCU. So maybe, and hopefully that's to our benefit when Mr. Sinister is introduced.
Yeah, I mean, on one hand, the benefit of bringing in Mr. Sinister is the fact that we have not really seen him in live action before. So you have a entirely new canvas to work with, you know, something that people just haven't seen before. And I think that that's always a good thing. That's going to be of much greater benefit to you than just retreading familiar territory that we've been down. Like, the Magneto stuff has been done to death. We can't just go there again. Of course, he'll be a character, but to have him as the primary antagonist, not quite yet. I think we need to wait to figure out a more interesting way to do that. But Mr. Sinister is just like completely open and right there for the taking. And you know, it's weird to say this, but the MCU is like still somewhat grounded in a way. They've obviously taken things extremely far from where we started, you know, 14, 15 years ago, almost, with Tony Stark just fighting for his company to now where we are. It's a totally different place, but they do really still try to ground things in reality and make them feel as real as possible in this world that they've created. That'll be the toughest task, but again, I think they've proven to do it with numerous characters before, so I think that they can be successful with it. Once Jean, the clone Jean, technically now, the one that's been living with the rest of the X-Men that has the child, once she finds out what's going on here, she's definitely in denial. She doesn't want to accept the fact that she's been a clone, and she's not indeed the original Jean Grey. And soon enough, Mr. Sinister takes over her mind, and we get this crazy sequence early in the episode where Jean Grey has just taken over X-Mansion, and it turns into a fucking horror movie at that point. I mean, there's so much happening here. Many of the X-Men in the mansion, they're having these weird illusion nightmares happening under the pretense of some sort of mind control. There was one moment where Rogue has like, Gambit has this vision of Rogue and Magneto together, and their bodies sort of bleed together. It felt like some David Cronenberg body horror. there felt like some allusions to The Shining. Like, it just got really crazy in those few minutes there to just showcase like the horror and the true might of the power that Mr. Sinister and then, of course, the Goblin Queen by proxy have in that particular situation. How did you feel about just seeing that whole sequence unfold and just all of the different elements of horror and kind of the shock and awe and the nature of everything that came to pass there?
Oh, I loved it. Again, it felt like an episode of Jujutsu Kaisen to me, where curses are made by like negative emotions, like human negative emotions. And I really feel like that's exactly what our Jean Grey / Madeline Pryor clone was doing. She was using the negative emotions of everyone to kind of create this weird, funhouse of madness within the X-Mansion. I just really love that, the idea of an X-Mansion being turned into like a haunted house. I think that's really a really cool concept, and that's exactly what they did. It was also cool to see how powerful I think she was to be able to do that. I thought that was crazy. But even with even before we like kind of get started, right before there's like the moment where Morph and Logan are messing with Gambit, because the danger room literally has Magneto and Rogue listed for like every hour in there, talking about they were probably banging in there for every day, pretty much every hour.
They're fucking in the danger room.
They were fucking ridiculously. But it that quickly went from like reality into whatever bled into like Gambit's, you know what I mean, psychosis that he's going through, or the divisions that he's being made to see. And so I thought that was a really cool transition, because at first I was like, wait a second, what's happening here? And it was like, oh, that's what's going down here. So I really like that, the way that transitioned. But yeah, I thought it was a cool concept. I love how everything looked. Everything was really weird. I love how the voices that came out. There's like the one super weird one where like it Beast is like, I think you were on the wrong floor. It comes up the elevator and it's just kind of like staring at him. I was like, this is really crazy. But yeah, I really loved all those horror elements, man. I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, this is the best part of the episode to me. It was just super, super exciting to see completely new territory tapped into, especially from an animation standpoint, because this is relatively new for Marvel Studios. And now they're just like getting to the nitty gritty of like, oh, we're just going to like scare the hell out of you. We're just going to show you some like really horrific imagery. But obviously playing on the mental psyche of a lot of the characters, some of their deepest fears and some of their deepest things that they're cautious about. And to see that all come to fruition in this way, it was great. And I love the animation and how they brought that to life. I thought it was like gorgeously done, because again, we spoke about this last week. Didn't have a ton of resources in the 90s. You know, their budget was half the budget of Batman the Animated Series. And it shows, you know, Batman the Animated Series has gorgeous, beautiful, almost timeless animation. Like, that animation will never look old to me. But the animation in the original 90s cartoon, it certainly took some shortcuts here. But to now just have the full resources available at their disposal to be able to do a sequence on this type of scale, to make it look colorful and vivid and bright and also horrific at the same time. Really gorgeous stuff there. Loved it. And then, of course, again, the Goblin Queen comes to fruition. We get a showdown as well between the Goblin Queen and Jean Grey. Jean Grey sort of taps into her mind and is able to, you know, kind of overcome, you know, the threat that's there, because you see Morph and Wolverine, a crew of them, go to try to really address this issue and to try to take out the Goblin Queen and take out Mr. Sinister as well. And that kind of brings us to that showdown between those two. How did you feel about just, you know, the conversation there that it felt like the episode was having? The fact that, yeah, they're facing down, you know, one another, but they are like kind of a part of the same, you know, person. You know, they're two sides of a similar coin, obviously. And there's obviously, you know, more deeper connections with the whole Madeline Pryor stuff, which they do a little bit of alteration here with that story. But just seeing like them two come head to head, and the fact that, again, we don't really have the most direct information in terms of when they switched, when that occurred, how long clone Jean has been in the X-Mansion versus original Jean being somewhere far away. Ultimately, that coming to fruition in that final battle. How did you feel about that moment?
Man, this is like it's again. I just didn't know we were gonna get here so fast. I was like, whoa, are we doing Madeline versus Jean already? Is this happening? It was cool, man. It was great to see. I love how complicated this thing has gotten. Again, so fast, because it's like, when did they get switched? Whose memories is who? We know Madeline definitely had the baby, right? But it's also like, dang, Jean still got a lot of memories in there. You know what I mean? Almost every memory in there. And I really love what they do with Jean too, where, you know, they have like these faceless pictures of old memories of like, is that her memories? Is it not? The only way I can think about it, you know, Jean's a fainter, bro. I think they should just go back and figure out the last time that Jean fainted and do some math. And that's probably the last time, like, that's probably when they got switched. Like, whenever, because she even knocked on the door and fainted. I was like, yep, there she go. That's Jean. And so, like, I really think if they really thought about it, there might be some camera footage. I don't know. But if they go back and just figure out the last time she fainted, we might figure out when she got switched. But yeah, it's a really cool dynamic, man, because even that comic storyline, it's a little different. Cyclops peaced out. When Jean came back around, he was like, I'm gone. Sorry, he kind of left Nathan. He kind of abandoned Nathan, and he abandoned Madeline. Also, Mr. Sinister abandoned Madeline in the comic. Mr. Sinister was like, "You're not as strong as the other Jean. You kind of suck. Goodbye." And so it's really interesting to see how they kind of don't go that direction here. They kind of, you know, Cyclops kind of stays with her and has to kind of teeter that line between old Jean and new Jean. Though, of course, he's like, "Yeah, I don't think you're the Jean I think you are." And Madeline's like, "Well, Storm would have believed me. Well, Storm's not here, ma'am. And you still would have been wrong because you are indeed the clone." So it was crazy to see them again go face to face, because now there have been so much wildness already embedded within their story. But very cool to see something again. You never know what you're going to get in the show now. Like, this episode was like one of those things. It was like, this is kind of unpredictable. This is very unpredictable. You don't know which way they're going to go, but very happy to see it. Very happy to see them adopt a storyline. And for Madeline Pryor and for Jean to be here is kind of crazy. The only thing is, I wish we had just a little more time to see, like, Goblin Queen be Goblin Queen. You know what I mean? Like, she was a villain for like, it felt like 10 minutes. and I knew she was like a little bit more powerful than that. So I wanted to see her a little more, but I think overall, for what was happening, I think I'm still really happy with what we got with Jean versus Madeline and the team versus Madeline.
Yeah, I think the best aspect of this is that what you take from the comic, which is like a more sprawling epic story, you really just hone in on the two individuals that matter, Jean and Madeline here, make it a much more intimate affair, and the fact that it becomes really just about those two at the end of it, and she's tapping into her mind, seeing those visions and those memories, which is how the episode started, in fact. You know, you see Madeline, you know, sort of tapping into the memories of like, oh, wow, these are shared experiences almost. These are similar things that I also remember. It's weird. There were flashes of like the whole Dark Phoenix saga, you know, that happened in that moment. Mm-hmm. I just like that they just honed in on that stuff and got really, really insular and sort of introspective. Just the fact that these are two women who've had a lot of their agency removed from them because of Mr. Sinister. And now they have to find a way to discover that again. And we're going to do it in a way that isn't necessarily dependent on the presence of a Scott, so to say, but they have to both come to terms with that on their own. And I like the choice of, you know, the departure, you know, of it was Madeline who left at the end, or was it? I'm still kind of confused.
Madeline left.
Madeline left. I thought so. I was Madeline like, wait, left. Who left here? But yeah, Madeline left. So her just like taking that time to say, like, I got to figure this out for myself, because like everything I thought that I knew is just not true anymore. So I think just good strokes there. Good additions to their characters into the layers. But Scott, I mean, he will have to deal with this. And I think that this is going to add just another thing for him to have to juggle on top of the additional things that he was concerned with. Obviously fulfilling that leadership position, coming in the shadow of Xavier, Magneto coming in, and him having to sort of just hand over the control of the team to Magneto and to sort of, you know, be deferential to him because it was in Xavier's will. Now, everything he thought he knew is just completely throw it out the window. You know, you got a child with a woman that you did not think she was. You know, this is a different woman altogether. Your baby also now is infected with this sort of nanotechnology. We'll get to that in a second with Nathan Summers. But what are your thoughts on just like Scott's journey, and just like already in three episodes, he's dealt with a lot of shit and it doesn't appear to be slowing down anytime soon. It's just going to probably stack on all the issues and all of the pressure that I think not only comes with being the leader, you know, so to say, of the X-Men, but also just the fact that now his personal life has been very much affected by the events that have taken place.
Oh, he's experiencing so much loss right now. And I think as somebody, you know, even though he did kind of have to hand over things to Magneto, he's still a leader. You know, I would say he's like B captain, you know what I'm saying? And so he's like, it's just crazy to have to watch him go through this. He's lost his mentor and teacher ever so recently in Charles Xavier. His wife wasn't really his wife, but now his old wife is back. That's weird. But he still technically lost another person. He lost his baby mama, technically. And not also the baby mama, he lost the baby. And so now moving forward is like, to be honest, I don't know how Cyclops keeps it together half the time. He was losing it just really in this episode. He was losing it. He didn't know what to do, where to go. I mean, you could tell there were just so many moments. There's even the moment where they're telling Madeline she's the clone. And Madeline looks at Cyclops and he makes no face. Because she's expecting him to say, oh, no, she's the real Jean Grey. I was like, dang, yeah, he's just going through it, man. And I don't know what it means for him. I don't know what's going to happen. I hope he's okay. But yeah, he's going to have to deal with it. There's the moment him and Jean are looking at each other in the eyes at the end of the episode. And I wonder what Jean's going to say. I'm very curious, because there's another whole thing here where Jean is trying to get her memories back or whatever. And guess who's there once again? His name is Logan. And she's like, oh, you mean that much to me, Logan? I was like, oh my goodness, what is going on in this triangle? So yeah, he has a lot to deal with, man. I kind of feel for Cyclops right now.
And he can't buy a win. Tough break for him. He's going through quite a lot. Damn near had a breakdown, you know, at the end of the episode. Like, I just, it's like, I just won't deal with this. I cannot accept this. Luckily, he doesn't just outright leave like he does in the comics. Like, he does stick around, but they play with that idea that it's like, this man has like dealt with so much and it might be his breaking point. He might just have to walk away from this shit. It might be that detrimental to his mental stability as a human being, because how can you accept something like this? How can you come to grips with this and try to make sense of it? None of it makes sense. And you don't even have all the answers. You just have to accept it. And your loved ones, the people closest to you, they're all fucking affected by this, including your newborn baby, who is now infected with a techno virus of some sort, you know, that Mr. Sinister has implanted into him now. This is obviously allusions to the fact that Nathan Summers grows up to be Cable. And Cable was a big character in the original animated series, and they're obviously going to go back to that here as well. And by the end of it, we see that Bishop is going to take Nathan Summers into the future to try to figure out a cure for the virus. But we don't know exactly where in the future Bishop is going to go. And so you see Cyclops and Jean, they're having to deal with this and just like allow this to occur, because this is probably the best possible outcome for their son, because Beast is like, hey, this is going to just keep going and keep growing within him. There's nothing I can do to stop it. Like, unless we try to find something in the future, you know, and Bishop can be responsible for him, that's the only way we can move forward. But I think that this is just like another really good example of like these really dark things that they're tackling, because this is like crazy. The fact that like Cyclops and Jean just have to be okay with this, like, he's gonna go to the future and what's gonna happen, we don't have a clue. And obviously they're not privy to the information of who he necessarily comes to be at this point, but what are your thoughts on this? Obviously just the emotional gut punch of the moment, I think, of just seeing a baby kind of go through that torment and then ultimately being taken away from their parents. But then also what it means for the character, Nathan Summers becoming Cable, and how they might try to tie that back into the current storyline of where we're at.
I really like how they close the time loop. I think that's really cool. Because at some point, the baby got to be born. You know what I mean? Like, when is Cable coming? So I like that they did that here. What's really interesting to me, though, is I feel like they're purposely trying to tell us that time is changing. You know what I mean? Like, Bishop and Beast are kind of talking about how, like, you know, like, although some time has already happened, Bishop is like, things are kind of different. Like, maybe not everything happened in history as we thought, because time is constantly changing in a way that you can't really account for. So I'm wondering if, like, Cable will be back in a different manner or for a different reason, or when will we see even Bishop again? You know what I mean? Like, will he come back different? Is the new future different from Bishop's old future? You know what I mean? Like, that, there's a lot of questions there, but I think it's really cool in that way. But also, that might be the reason why we're seeing all these weird, dark things here. You know what I mean? And I think talking about that is another cool way to say, you don't know what's coming up in this X-Men timeline. You know what I mean? Like, you never know what's going to happen. So I think that what they're doing with Cable is pretty cool. Again, we didn't see him too much in the original animated series, but Maybe we'll see him more, you know, and maybe we'll see even Hope. Hope's numbers is important too, so maybe we'll see Hope. I really don't know where they're going to go, but I think it's kind of cool how they're telling us with Nathan, with Bishop, that like everything may not be as it seems with this current timeline in X-Men 97. And I think that's a pretty dope path to go down.
Certainly. I think that's what excites me, is that it does appear that we're going to get a lot more of Bishop in this particular season and in the show entirely. The fact that now he has a very clear and distinct purpose. And I feel like we're going to be following that for multiple scenes and multiple stories moving into the rest of this season, because he didn't have a ton to do in that original series. It was mostly kind of a side character alongside Cable whenever he popped up, but here having very much I think an intention on being a key member of the team, and obviously finding out more information and dealing with time. Like, he is the one and kind of the master of time travel to be able to relay that information, and that feels like it's going to play a very, very key component to the stories moving forward. So I'm excited to see how that takes shape and ultimately what they do to kind of, you know, bring this all back around and to make it make sense. The last big scene of this episode is we see Storm. She is just sitting in a bar, living an ordinary life now. As we know, last week she lost her powers at the hands of the Friends of Humanity. And so she has basically departed the X-Men to start her new life. But before the episode ends, we get the appearance of Forge, which is another mutant character who comes and basically says, you know, I'm here to help you figure out how to make you become your old self again. We're going to figure out how to get your powers back. They don't really say much else beyond that. That's where the episode ends, but it certainly already sets into motion what the arc of Storm is going to be for at least this season in terms of her gaining her powers back. But then also, I think we can assume probably developing a relationship with Forge. There is comic connectivity there, and there is a romantic relationship there that if they choose to, they could pull from that. But any thoughts on this and just how it might shape her arc and what we see out of her character for the remainder of the season?
I think this is really cool. Forge is really cool. Of course, Storm is, she's Storm. I think, again, first and foremost, I think they had to nerf Storm. You know what I mean? She's Omega level mutant. We can only have one of those around, or a couple of those around. With Professor X gone and Magneto being here, it's like, all right, y'all got too many powerful people. Y'all could just kind of destroy anybody. So I think they nerfed her for a little bit to take her on a different journey of being powerless, because there's a really cool story, I think, to tell with that. I think, you know, whenever Storm does get her powers back, I think it'll be like this huge epic moment, and we'll all be cheering and we'll all be like, oh my God, Storm is back. And I look forward to that moment, to be honest. I'm like, shoot, I'm ready for the ramp up. I'm ready for all the in-betweens to get to that moment. And I think it will be cool to spend some time with Forge, who is of Native American descent. You know what I mean? We get to spend time with a Native American techno whiz and a black goddess. I'm down. You know what I'm saying? I think that's a really cool path to go down, especially with Professor X not being around. It's very interesting. So I think Storm will be around and have a very interesting ramp up here to get her powers back. She'll get them back eventually. What is also interesting, I don't know how. All I know is, you know, Forge is known to make, he's the crazy technology whiz. He can do all kind of things. But I'm curious, like, what's the difference between what Forge can do versus what Beast can do versus what people can do in the future? Like, I really like how there's different kind of scientists and techno and technology people in this show, because it's like, oh, those are their differences. It's like they're kind of making small lines between these different people. And I think that's cool as well. But yeah, I'm very excited for Storm to be back. And I think whatever story arc she goes through to get her powers back, I think it'll be really cool emotionally. But I think it'll have a big impact when they do decide to bring her back.
Yeah, I'm just glad that they didn't wait on this, because I was a little worried that we would go like 3 or 4 episodes and not hear anything from Storm, and then all of a sudden we would figure out like, oh yeah, she will get her powers back, it's just going to take some time. I'm just glad that they just went ahead and said like, no, we're obviously going to give her powers back. Yes, you have to wait, but we're just going to show you right now that we are kickstarting that journey. Like, it's going to be a part of this season and be a regular occurrence. And having Forge, I think that makes total sense that he's the one to kind of find her at her lowest moment, which is going to certainly play back into how their relationship develops. And so it should be really good stuff. Before we wrap up here, any other last minute things, any other observations from this episode, any other key things that you wanted to point out from this most recent one?
I don't think so. I think there was a really cool moment where hold on, let me remember this correctly. Yes, okay. There was a really cool moment where Morph turns into Spiral. It was really fast, but everyone was like voting, and he was like all six arms because he turns into Spiral. I thought that was really cool. We see Spiral in like maybe season two, season three of X-Men animations. I forgot. But yeah, I thought that was cool. And then only other thing I want to point out is actually no, that's it, man. I think that's really it for me.
Morph had good moments. That was a really funny moment. The one that I was just gonna single out, again, is another Morph centric moment. I just like how shook he was once he realized it was Mr. Sinister that is responsible.
Oh yeah,
they have a lot of history. And he was able to provide a lot of context, you know, for Mr. Sinister and his motivations and what he was trying to achieve. I mean, to be honest, like those episodes of Morph and Mr. Sinister and their backstory, those are not my favorite in X-Men the Animated Series. Like those are. Mm-hmm. They're a little dry because they move a little bit at a slower pace. But I do like that is, again, these characters who have often just kind of been on the outskirts of time, sometimes are just like around but don't have much to do. That's just not the case here. Like we're getting small things every week, it seems like, even with Gambit. You pointed out the moment earlier about looking at the Danger Room and seeing the times booked up. Like that's a small 10-second thing, but that continues that story, and I just love that they are very intentional to not introduce and overload us with too many characters as of yet and still make sure that our primary leaders are getting their just due. And so, yeah, can't wait to see how those things continue to unfold for the rest of the season. But, folks, with all of that said, those are all of our thoughts on Episode 3, Fire Made Flesh of X-Men 97. If you've seen this episode, definitely hit us up and let us know what you think. And with that being said, that's going to do it for this episode of Two Black Nerds. Of course, thank you again for tuning in to another podcast. We will obviously be back next week to talk about the latest episodes of X-Men 97. So definitely be on the lookout for that as we continue to review this series each and every week. And then also look out for other reviews that are going to be coming. We're going to talk about Godzilla Kong, the new empire. We're going to talk about a new horror movie called Immaculate. Many, many things to look forward to. You can also tap into all of our archival episodes right now if you missed an episode recently, including our recent review of Ghostbusters, The Frozen Empire. A lot of empires going around lately. But definitely go check out those episodes on our feed. And as always, definitely tune in until next time, and we will see y'all then.
Yes, sir. We are Audi 5000. Please check out our Nerds of Mischief collection at twoblacknerds.com. And remember, always bet on black. Appreciate y'all. Love y'all. Thank you for listening to another episode of Two Black Nerds, where we're too black,
too nerdy,
and we out, y'all. Peace.